So we are going to talk today about Nexmark and Apache Beam. This is a work in progress at this moment in the Beam community. We are building a benchmark solution that is based on Beam. And we are going to present this and go into the details. So first, before we start, who we are. I'm Ismael Mejia, I'm an Apache Beam committer, and I work for Talent, and my colleague is...
Hi everyone, my name is Etienne Chauchot, so I work at Talent as well. I'm a contributor to the Beam community. I hope you understand me well with this little Frenchy accent of mine. And I will give the floor to Ismael and we'll be back for the implementation part.
Okay, so well, just quickly I will talk about Talent for those who don't know it. We have a solution for data integration. Basically, it was an Eclipse application where you can easily create transforms and all this stuff, and it generates the code to run in Spark and Hadoop and whatever you want, and whatever distribution you want. But more recently, we are really oriented towards Beam, so we have a new solution that is a data preparation solution that is based on Beam also. And even more recently, the most recent project we are working on is a solution for data streams that allows to create all these transformations and stuff and have nice visualization of everything. This is still a work in progress, so soon to be out. But well, this is why we are involved in Beam. So, but the subject of this talk is not this, it's the benchmark. So we are going to present, this is the agenda, we're going to talk a little bit about the state of the art of benchmarking, in particular in the big data world. We are going to present Nexmark, that is a research paper from the 2000s that introduces benchmarking on continuous data streams. And we are going to talk more in detail about how this gets implemented in Beam, initially in Dataflow, then in Beam, and why this is a good story, why this is useful, and we will go really into detail of some concepts of Beam. So we will use this as a use case to introduce Beam for the people who don't know Beam also. This is like the main goal, apart of benchmarking, this is the other big goal of the talk. So, and then finally we will discuss the current state, where we are, and well, this is it now. So, well, we're going to start about talking about benchmarking in general. First, well, it's quite simple, this slide. Well, the first question is why we do we benchmark? And well, we benchmark because we want to measure our systems. We want to see their performance is correct. And also we want to see if the operations that we are doing in the data are correct also. So in traditional benchmark suites, what happens, we have a step when we generate data, and this is normally synthetic data. Sometimes this is saved in some data stores and then read and processed. We also compute this data to get the results, and we measure all this process to see if it's good. And finally, we validate the results. I mean, it's quite simple. And in the small research we did about this, we found that there were like four big families of benchmarks. We have these micro benchmarks who really test core functionalities, like for example, sort and core operation. I mean, they are more functional, like benchmarks that test a little bit higher level, like joins and other kind of operations. There are more interesting families of benchmarks that have a business case, that all the TPC suites that I suppose some of you know, like TPC-DS or TPC-H. And finally, well, more recently, there are more benchmarks oriented towards data mining and machine learning workloads. So they create a model and then train the model. And they use this to test the infrastructure or the systems. That's the part we are more interested in. So, well, we have, anyway, in the big data world, we have still some issues with benchmarking. One issue is that, well, we don't have like a standard suite. Well, there are many standards, but nothing de facto. As you see there, well, TerraSort is probably the most known benchmark. That was the one who Spark beat, like, I don't know, 4 years ago, I don't remember. They generate a bigger amount of random data, then they sort it. There is the TPC-XHS suite that was created to test Hadoop systems. And there are others that we will discuss in detail later on. But well, the problem, why we don't have this? Because we don't have a common API, a common model to do the things. And this is where Beam comes in. And also, these suites are really oriented towards Hadoop. the Hadoop infrastructure. But things are changing now in the landscape. We have another systems to run this processing, like Mesos, for example. So these are not covered now. And well, there is also the fact that some of these benchmarks were oriented towards, for example, testing data locality, so they mix synthetic and non-synthetic data. This is not a defect, but it's good to be able to isolate those easily. And finally, and more important for this talk, there are really few benchmarking suites that support streaming semantics. So more in detail, well, this is the, so I have already introduced some of those. The Terasoft one was the one of the sorting random data. The TPC HS was a business case to test Hadoop distributions, actually. Well, it's officially not this, but it's mostly what it's used for. The Berkeley family of benchmarks are this kind of SQL-like benchmarks who run in SQL-like systems like Hive, like Redshift. And finally, the High Bench and Big Bench are two benchmarks from Intel. In particular, High Bench is quite interesting because it has all these sort of families of benchmarking. I mean, they have cases who are micro benchmarking, they have a really business case, and they also have cases for streaming. They test the tumbling windows and stuff like that. So this is one interesting one because it has a little bit of everything. But however, this is implemented for some things in Spark, for some things in Hadoop. And finally, well, 2 years ago, there was Yahoo who published a blog post about the Yahoo streaming benchmark, which generated some activity in the Apache community because some of the projects said, like, oh, this was not implemented as it should have been. So there was a little back and forth about this. So all of this to arrive to our case, that is Nexmark. Nexmark was a suite of queries, let's say, a little bit like the TPC suite, but oriented towards continuous processing. If I remember well, in the original paper that was published, it was implemented in something like SQL style language. And this is a business case, a really simple business case. We have persons who can sell items. This is an auction system. And then we have bidders who are going to participate in the bids. And well, with this we can easily construct a real-time case easily to answer questions like which items have more bids in the last hour, for example, or things like that. So the queries of Nexmark follow this business pattern. So what is the story of Nexmark? On Google Dataflow, Nexmark was implemented on Google Dataflow quite close to the paper implementation. They implemented the 8 queries that were in the paper, and they added more queries to exploit the functionalities that were not covered, in particular based on some client use cases that they found. And it was used overall as an integration test scenario. So this is where the story comes to Beam, because as most of you should know, the Dataflow SDK was like the basis of what then became Beam. So this is what we entered Beam. And well, I suppose some of you went in the talks this morning, but I have to introduce a little bit Beam for those who weren't. What's Beam? Beam is an abstraction. It's a programming model that unifies batch and streaming in only one single API. And we have SDKs to write this kind of data processing programs, pipelines, we call them in Beam, in Java and Python. And finally, we have all this with one code. You can execute this in multiple execution engines. And currently, we have already these first four, the Flink, Spark, Apex, and Dataflow. And also, I missed the direct runner also. That is also part of this. And we have work in progress for Storm, from JStorm, and for GearPump. So this is getting some traction now. What are the ideas on Beam? We have one really, really important concept in Beam is that every element is time-stamped. And we have this definition of what is event time. And event time is when the events happen in the system. And we have a real separation of this and processing time. That is the moment when the data was processed. In particular, well, this graph shows when we are going to compute some data, where some numbers. But what is important to see here is that we have this finalization semantics. This is, for example, a batch case. Well, we finish when we have all the data because we know when we finish. But if we have an infinite continuous stream of data, we don't know when to finish. So Beam has some utilities to play with this, to decide when we calculate or we compute the data. And one of these are windows, that is this case. We are talking about fixed windows here that are taking these event time events and putting them in finite chunks so we can compute them later. And if we see this with the same example, we are creating here fixed windows of 2 minutes, and we are calculating them in some moment. Additionally to this, Beam has the concept of triggers that allows to play with more details of this, but well, we'll discuss this later. But well, all of this, it's not working. Okay, all of this to introduce the basic concepts of Beam is the concept of a pipeline. A pipeline is a set of transformations that we do on data, and we do this, for example, reading from a source of data. In this case, for example, we are reading from Kafka. We are creating windows that are this is a transformation, windows per minute. Then we are going to compute a count on this data, and finally we are putting this data out in a sink, that is another kind of transform, and we are going to write this into HDFS. This is, well, a really, really simplified version of what we can do, but just to introduce the general concepts, the concept of a collection, the concept of a source, the concept of the each transform, and what is a pipeline.
So,
again. So we have, let's say, we can say that we have like three families of transforms in Beam. We have element-wise transforms who correspond to the mappers in MapReduce. In particular, we have the concept of a pardieu that is like a more generic map that can make operations with time semantics, and they can process things in bundles. And also, well, we have more precise implementations like filters, map, flat map. And we have also the grouping operations, and we can consider this what is the group by key kind of operations, and the combiners that are the equivalent of reducers in MapReduce. But more interesting for the model is the operation that allow us to define when to compute the data. That's the operations that are used with windows and triggers. And one interesting thing, why we do this? We do this because we want to play with the trade-off of calculating the data. If we wait too much, we don't have a good latency. If we need results in advance, we can play with these windows and triggers to have this. So this is just to introduce some concepts of Beam, because we are going to need this to the details of the implementation of NextMap that we are going to see right now.
So okay, so here is when NextMap meets Beam. Well, originally, like Ismail said, it was ported by Mark Schill from Google to Beam, but version 0.2, to be used as integration test cases. And so we needed to refactor it to update to the latest Beam version, and also to refactor it to have a more generic way, because some little points were still linked to Google Dataflow, so we needed some generic code to be able to run in all the supported runners. And we also changed some of the queries to use all the newest APIs that came out, like the state and timer APIs. And in the end, we run all the queries to validate the Beam runner support of the features we were using in the queries. So NextMark, well, it's not working. So what are the advantages of using NextMark? Why did we use NextMark? Beam. Because Beam is a rich model. It allows us to express all the use cases of Nexmark with its rich APIs. And also, we could leverage what we said before, that it's a unified model between batch and streaming. So we could run exactly the same code in batch mode and streaming mode to test all the runners and the execution engine in both the modes without changing a bit of code. And also, these multi-runner architecture of BIM enables us to test the runners, let's say one runner, and compare two versions of the same runner, or to compare two versions of the same execution engine, and do this for all the supported runners. And at least there is these metric things, these monitoring features that we have in BIM that allows us to have output for Nexmark. So I will dig a little more into the implementation, starting by the components of Nexmark. Well, it all starts with a generator, and this generator is responsible for generating events that can be new person login, new auctions, new bids on an auction, and all these events are timestamp and correlated between each other. One person is doing this auction and is placing that bid. And these events are fed to pipeline queries, that use P collection of events as an input. So each query of Nexmark is actually a BIM pipeline, and it takes as an input a P collection of events, and it takes as an output, it gives as an output metrics like the execution time, like the processing event rates, like the number of results in the output collection. And all this needs to be managed by a component that is called the Nexmark Launcher, that is pretty much responsible for creating the sources that use the generator, and also to run all these queries and to monitor them. Of course, there's these main entry points that launch all the solution. And one thing to notice there is that, like we said, we have these batch and streaming modes, and how the difference is made in Nexmark is that we use what we call bounded sources for batch mode, and we use unbounded sources for streaming mode. And that's this very difference that triggers the batch mode or the streaming mode in the runner. But obviously, like, it's a benchmark, even if we use streaming mode, we still get some finite collection of data, otherwise the batch never ends. So I'm going to present here the queries of Nexmark, but not all of them. Actually, there is 13 queries. We present only 7 of the most interesting ones. They answer some questions about the auction system, like who is selling in particular US states, the query number 3, or the query number 5, which auctions have seen the most bids in the last period, or the number 6, what is the average selling price per seller for the last 10 closed auctions, or what are the highest bids per period. This one is a very simple one, the query number 7. But these, as Ismail said previously, there is also 3 added ones that were added by Google out of their customer experience, and also to use some things that were not in the original Nexmark paper, like session windows, or like the difference between event time and processing time. So query number 9 is the winning bids that it was added. It's the bids that won the auction, the most recent of the highest bids. Query number 11 and 12 are pretty much the same, but one is in event time, the other one is in processing time. So query number 11 is how many bids did a user make in each session that were active, and query number 12 is in a fixed processing time. So we see here that the aim of all these queries is to use as many verbs of the BIM API as possible to be used as integration tests, for example, non-rotation tests or performance tests. So they can use things like join, like state or timer APIs, like all these kinds of windows, the fixed window, the slide window, the session window, even the custom window, they use also combiners, could be custom combiners as well. And we have some sort of triggering from the most simple one to most complex ones with combination of triggers. And once again, query number 12 is the only one that works in processing time. All the others work in event time. So first, I will show them a little query structure because they all share the same structure. They all start with getting the peak collection of events that comes from the generator that I was talking about. And they then all use a pardo. Like Ismail said, it's a parallel do. It's the toolbox of BIM, and a filter to extract the object of interest, because we have events and we need to focus on whether we are counting bids. We need to extract the bids out of the event flow, and we do this with a pardo and a filter. We also, at the end of all queries, every query ends with a pardo that outputs the output collection, that is the output of a business object, that it could be an auction and a price, or an auction and a count, or things like this, the whole, depending on the queries and the business case of the query. But when they differ is in step 3, when we apply all the transform, that could be grouping functions, that could be window functions, that could be count or filters. So here, the aim is to show you a bit of feedback on the implementation, what we used of BIM in the queries, and what are the questions we had to answer. So the first one is when to compute data. The question, one part of the answer to that question are windows, like we already said, but I want to just focus a bit on the three types of windows. First, these windows are often required when you have unbounded data, because it's an infinite collection, so you have to divide into chunks the data, otherwise you cannot group them or do anything. So there is these three kinds of windows. The first one is the fixed window that is used in query 7, and that allows to express things like, I want to know what happens between 1 and 2 o'clock, 2 and 3, 3 and 4. There is this sliding window that has overlap, and it's used in query number 5. It is there to express things like, I want the update of what happens every 10 minutes. I want the update of what happened the last hour. And there is this session windows that are used in query number 11 that is pretty much the same as web sessions in the Notion. It's a group of elements that are split by a gap of inactivity, a gap in the timestamp where there were no events, and this gap duration is configurable, of course. But there is a fourth kind of window that is the default one that is used in query number 6 and query number 12 that is called the global window. The global window is what happens when you don't specify a window at all. You get all the data into one global window. I will focus a little bit on with the triggers on the global window. So the other part of the answer to when we compute data are triggers. We already talked about that, but I will show a bit of examples about triggers. First, what is the trigger? Simple definition is it's a condition to fire computation. So there is a default trigger. When you don't specify a trigger, you get the default one, which is at the end of a window. And they are always required when you do on an infinite collection of data, so unbounded data. When we are in the global window, as you have an infinite collection of data and they're all in the same window, well, the window will never end. So it's necessary, it's mandatory to have triggers in that case. So in query number 11, we have one kind of trigger that triggers on the condition of the number of events, that one of the examples. And you see there that we schedule a trigger to fire each time there will be 20 bits arriving, so it will fire at bit number 20, bit number 40. But another example that is in this famous query number 12 is another trigger that is based on time. But if you recall well, this query number 12 is in processing time. So you cannot rely on the timestamp, because a timestamp is event time. So still, you need to group and you need to have a notion of duration. And this is done with one of the triggers that can be some sort of a timer that triggers when the first element comes, plus a duration. That way it creates, even in processing time, a sort of period. So in the example on the persons, you have a firing after 20 seconds, but it could be 5 persons that came, or it could be only 2. That's based on time. Another key point is, how do we make a join using bin? Well, this example is in query number 3, which is who is selling in particular US states. So it's a join of the auctions collections and the person's collection. And to do that in BIM, we use something that we call a cogroup by key. It does group the values that are the values of key pay collections that share the same key. So it's a basic join. We have here on the left the person collection keyed by person ID, in which there is Mark from New York City, William from Paris, Jack from Miami, and we have on the right this auction collection keyed by seller ID, which is the same time person ID. It's the same notion, not in the same object. And we have in this collection, someone is selling his car, someone is selling his bike, someone is selling his noisy dog. So in the end, we want to join them. So basically, it just takes what is both in the two collections. And so we get as an output, after the join, Mark that is selling his car and William that is selling his bike. But there is something to notice here, is the color, because after the join, as we are joining objects that do not have the same type, we need to tag them by their type to be able to fetch them afterwards. After the join, we need to fetch them. So that is why we have a tag, a green tag on the persons and a blue tag on the auctions. One is how to temporarily group events. In query number 9, which is the winning bit, we need to group the auctions and the bids. But as the grouping function is per window, we need first to have the auction and the bids in the same window. So this is done by a custom window in this example. So in addition to the fixed, the sliding, the session window that we have, and the global window, of course, we have the ability to specify a window, how to assign, how to merge the windows. So in this particular case, we have the bids coming and auction events coming. So this is time as a next axis. We have first this bid number 1. Then we have an auction. We're in event time, obviously. I said all the queries are in event time, except the query number 12. So we have this bid number 1 coming, the auction event coming, and then bid number 2, 3, 4, and 5. And for each element, we will assign a window. So the auction will be the red line. The auction window will start at the timestamp of the auction and end at the auction expiry. And the bids will have all the same windows. Each one of them will have a window starting at the timestamp and ending at the maximum auction duration. That's because at this point we haven't joined yet the auctions and the bids. So we don't know that the auctions are done or not, are ended or not. So
we need to give the bits a bit of time to be able to be merged at the end. So in the end, when we merge, we do this with a condition. What we want to do, as I said, we want to have bits and auction in the same window. So we will merge the bit windows into the auction window. And we do this only at one condition. If the bid window starts, is before the auction end. This seems obvious, but this is the condition in the merge process. So in the end, we get this window below, which is the which has the auction event, the bid number 2, 3, and 4. That's because bid number 1 arrived before the auction. Remember, we are in processing time. There's no late things. So bid number 1 arrives before the auction. So obviously, it's not from this auction. It's for a previous auction. And bid number 5 arrived after the expiry of the auction. So it's not his window doesn't get merged into the auction window.
Another thing very new is the stateful
State API. So stateful pardew is a pardew that uses state. It allows us in NextMark to answer the question of how to deal with out-of-order data. In query number 3, which is who is selling in US, in particular US states, we have to join the auctions collection with the person collections. But the thing is that we can configure NextMark to have out-of-order events. So we can have a case in which we get the person event after his related auctions. So we need a way in that case to memorize things. We need a way to have a consistent state to memorize the auctions waiting for the person events to come and memorizing the person events waiting for his related auctions. So that is done using the state API. And where does the trigger take place? The trigger API is there for clearing, because one person can do as many auctions as he wants. So basically, we need a way to know when we could clear the state, the person state. So we set a timeout, maximum allowed waiting for auctions, and at that time we set a timer to fire, and when it fires, we clear the state.
Oh, up. One last point
is how to tweak the reduction phase, the reduction in the sense of map values. Actually, in this use case, it's query number 6. It's how to calculate an average selling price over the last 10 closed auctions. In this diagram, it's over the last 3 closed auctions. And well, it uses combiner to do so. And combiners are reducers that use accumulators. And to do this over the last 3 closed auctions, we need to specialize the combiner. And to specialize the combiner means to tweak the reduction phase when we deal with the accumulators. When we add elements to accumulators, we can tweak. When we merge the accumulators between each other, we can tweak. And when we extract the output data of the final accumulator, we can tweak. So here is the average selling price over the last 3 closed auctions. So we have a collection of the winning bids, the bids that have won the auctions that we previously computed. And as it's computed in parallel, we have chunks of these collections, of this P collection. So for each chunk, we have one accumulator. So when we are adding elements to the local accumulator, we just sort these elements by timestamp and keep the last three. That way, we get all the last three closed auctions locally for each accumulator. And we do exactly the same while merging the accumulators between each other, when we will just sort by timestamp and keep the last three winning bits. That way, we will have not the local, but the global last three closed bits. Closed auction, so related bits. And one last point is just to compute the average. So that's the third trick point in the combining. So at the extraction, we just sum the prices of the bits and we divide by the
accumulator size. That way we have the average.
So the conclusion on these queries is that, first of all, it has a wide coverage of the Beam API. Almost all the verbs of the APIs were used. We also illustrate working in processing time. There is 11 queries that work in event time and one that works in processing time. Second, that is realistic, because these queries could have been implemented by a developer of an auction system, a real developer of an auction system. Even if it's a batch, it's realistic. And there is these extra queries that Google added out of their customer experience. So this is very realistic. And one last point, and not the least, is that they are complex queries. When we run them over all the runners, we figure out that there were bugs on some of the runners, and we were figuring out that there were missing features in these runners. So it kind of leveraged all the capabilities of the runners.
So in the end, Beam plus Nexmark is a win-win story.
First of all, it's one of the, let's say not first because there's this yellow, but there's it's the streaming tests, not so batch oriented, and we can use it in Beam for A/B testing, like on towards regression or performance. We can compare one given runner between two of these versions, or one given engine between two of these versions. We can also use it as integration tests, like SDK towards the runners and runners towards the actual execution engines. And one last point is that it allows us to update the Beam capability matrix that you can see on the website, that shows the features that are supported by the different runners.
I will give the floor to Ismail.
Okay, so well, now we are going to discuss a little bit about the benchmarking part, and in particular about the problems that we have when we benchmark, in particular these big data systems, and in this case concrete with Beam. Well, the first thing, as we just mentioned, the different runners have different capabilities, and this is because of the maturity of the implementation, or sometimes because of the main runner limitations. So it's difficult if you pretend to compare them. And in particular, if some runners, some execution engines in particular are specialized towards a kind of workload. So some are really oriented towards batch processing, some other are more into real-time things. So it's not easy to compare them. And I think it makes more sense, to evaluate which kind of jobs we will have if you want to use this to decide. But this is a really good tool that can be used for this. But again, it's a question of being conscient that the comparison is not going to be that that exact. Also, well, the other thing is that all these systems, in particular, if you have worked with the Spark, there's like a ton of knobs to change. So if you maybe tune this thing that way, it doesn't work in this other way, but this can help to at least test them between the same execution engine. And also, well, we have all the issues of distributed systems. You can run the benchmark and then two workers broke, so you have to deal with that you are going to have consistent results, probably. And if you are doing this in the cloud, it's even worse if you count the problem of noisy neighbors. So, well, this all to say that this is maybe a bummer for some people here, but we are not really comparing different runners because we don't think that we can do it this in a general way. This is really a by application case. But still, we are going to show a little bit of how the tool works. We have some extra configurations that we can put when we test a workload. We can. This is the default values that the normal configuration has. We can have a certain number of generator threads that are going to generate events. In this case, it's 100, and 100,000 events are generated. And we have this event rate sinus curve that is going to move in steps of 10,000. All of this is you can configure. You can have also this change the windows and change the watermark. That is quite interesting because we can generate artificial late events, so to see if everything is working as expected. And also we have these proportions that we can use for hot auctions, or for hot bidders, and for hot sellers. What this means that we want to have more of a little bit more of auction than some kind of auction or some kind of bidder. And finally, well, we can add additional artificial things like artificial CPU load and artificial IO load also. So with this, when we execute Nexmar, we run this with Maven. And you can see here that the promise of Beam of having one code and running in multiple runners is as simple as just changing the name of the runner and the profile that we have, and it works out of the box. But we have also to say that in blue you can see the specific options of every runner, so you have to put also this, I mean, for example, to detect what is the master node when you submit the job. But you can also do this with the with the native system way to do it, like we do in Spark. You can do Spark Summit like this and submit the job. And well, in this case, we have all the extra options of Spark to limit things. So this is how we do, and this is a normal the result of a normal execution in Spark. This is just in local mode, and it's a really small thing that I just did quickly to show you. But from here we can see two things. First is that the query tree, as you can see, has zero. This has zero because in this moment the Spark runner does not implement the state API and the timer API. And we can see also query 6 has a little bit of one of the bigger, in particular if you see in streaming, this is the same data for streaming. This is something because this happens because it's a quite heavy shuffle that is done there. This is it. Other use that we discussed before of Beam is to compare different versions of the same engine in the same runner. So we did this to compare Spark 1.6.0 and Spark 1.6.3 to see if we had some kind of regression performance. And it was not a clear result. As you can see, some workloads are better than in one version than in the other. So maybe this has to be studied in a more case-by-case but it can be a good thing, for example, to test if you are going to move to a newer version. You can use this and maybe have an accurate idea, or semi-accurate idea at least, of if it is good to do it. So it doesn't work. So well, with this we are going to discuss the current status and the future work. So this is the current execution matrix. This is the set of queries that we have and the different runners. Notice that we didn't include Dataflow in this because, well, this is ApacheCon. So, in yellow you can find some open issues. This is the number of the issues in Beam, in the Beam Jira. Particularly, in Query 3, as I said before, this is the state and timer API that has not been yet implemented by all the runners. So this is an issue. And in this, Apex has another issue with metrics that still has to be fixed. And Flink has an issue with finalization. But as you can see, we are in a really good level of coverage. So this has been a good thing. And and now we're going to discuss the current state.
This is the dedicated place where we open the issues related to Nexmar, because we didn't want to pollute all the Jiras of Beam for this particular Nexmar case. So we opened it in GitHub. And
it shows that we have still have five open issues. Some of them are related to an upstream fix, and some of them are a lack of tests. So, but we managed to close 46 of the issues that we opened.
There is also the same for the upstream.
So we gathered all these tickets, these Jara tickets, into one Jara ticket related to Nextmox. These ones are the Jara tickets for the upstream, for Beam upstream. So, like I said before, Nextmox could be used for integration tests. So it helped discover some bugs and some missing feature, like the state API, for example, for some runners. So each time we open a ticket, so we have now 9 open issues and 6 that were closed in the time we first run the Nextmox things and now. And the PR of Nextmox is open. And it's expected to be merged in the Beam Master
pretty soon. It's not reviewed yet, so but it's open.
Okay. Just one thing about this pull request: it was done just before ApacheCon, so it's really a recent subject. So we'll probably, with some luck, we'll have it for the next version of Beam, maybe. And what is the future work around this? Well, we still have to fix some the open issues. We would like to have more queries that cover cases maybe that are not covered, so this is a good idea we have. We also, if the once the new runners are ready, we want to integrate them and test them. And finally, this we want also to integrate this into the continuous integration test of Beam. This is another idea. And finally, there is an ongoing work in Calcite, in the Calcite-based SQL, and some of these queries that we saw can be really expressed in an easy way with Calcite, with an SQL. Not all of them, but some, and that would be a good idea to also add this so we can test also the SQL part. So this is an invitation to all of you. If you are interested in this and you think you can have a nice idea to contribute, we are open, we can discuss. If you want to help fix the open issues, I would be super happy also. And still we have to document some stuff, but this is what is going on. So finally, this one nice thing of this project is that it allowed us to interact with a lot of people in the community, and we just wanted to give the credit and the thanks to all of the people who were involved from different companies, and they are working in a really Apache way, providing fixes and helping us all around. So we're really thankful to all of them.
Thank you guys.
Those who are in the and these are some references if you want to go deeper into the details. This is
the Jira ticket Beam
160 that we have tattooed now here again. It's all the time we have seen it. That's all. If you have questions or comments,
we have maybe
even 1 minute.